as Mahatma Gandhi has said, that this model of development will lead you to the war and your civilization will end, because this development needs more and more resources, and in that process you will take others' resources, you will grab others' resources, and then there will be conflict in the society, and that conflict will lead you to the war. Gandhi used to say, either coexistence or no existence.
That's Himanshu Kumar, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Himanshu Kumar on Gandhian activism. The legacy of Mahatma Gandhi lives in various ways in India. Gandhi had his flaws, but as George Orwell wrote, compared with other leading political figures of our time, how clean a smell he has managed to leave behind. There are multiple struggles for justice and dignity going on all over India. A particularly important one is in Chhattisgarh. Chhattisgarh, which means 36 forts in Hindi, is a relatively new state. It was carved out of Madhya Pradesh in 2000. It is rich in resources. Corporations have, with government collusion, been coming in, taking land, and displacing the mostly Adivasi, indigenous people, who are also sometimes called tribals. It almost sounds like something out of the movie Avatar. An armed resistance to the depredations of state and corporate power has arisen. What is the role of Gandhian activism in such a violent situation? Himanshu Kumar is a staunch proponent and practitioner of Mahatma Gandhi's philosophy and techniques of nonviolence and civil disobedience. He worked for almost 2 decades in Chhattisgarh, serving the poor, until he was thrown out in 2009. He continues to publicize what is happening in Chhattisgarh, as he did when he was in the United States on a speaking tour. I talked with him in Boulder, Colorado. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let's start with your background, your family background. How did you become an activist? What was the process?
Grandfather of my father was a disciple of a very great social reformer in India. His name was Swami Dayanand. And when my great-grandfather started working against caste atrocities, and then my uncle, my father's elder brother, he was a great leader in India's independence movement. And then my father also joined India's independent movement. First he burned down railway station of our town, Muzaffarnagar. And then he gone underground when police chased him. And then he had correspondence with Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi asked him to come and stay with him in his ashram in Sevagram. And my father went there, and Mahatma Gandhi put him for a training on basic education, because Gandhi used to say, this education is designed to promote capitalism. And this very idea that capital can buy everything, including nature, natural resources, is a satanic idea. The nature cannot be bought or sold. So if India is to reform itself or to be a nation without exploitation, it has to change its education. So Gandhi had a very strong notion that in independent India, this education system must change. So he was trying for that, and he put my father for that, to work for that. And later, when farmers rose against landlords and they started killing landlords and take their land and distribute them among farmers in Andhra Pradesh, a province in India, then a great disciple of Mahatma Gandhi, Vinoba Bhave, started a movement. He said that it's a shame on us, on Gandhians, if the poor people have to pick up arms for a very just cause. They have a right to have land, because land cannot be owned personally. It's a community thing. Like sunlight, like water, land is for everyone. So then he started a land gift movement that is called in Hindi Bhudan Andolan. And my father also joined that. My father became full-timer. My father used to visit village to village asking for land for the poor of the village. So in that background, we also grew up. And we also decided that we will not work for the capital or for the state. Rather, we will serve the poor people in villages. And in 1992, just after 1 month of our marriage, we left our place that was Delhi, New Delhi, the capital city of India, and we went to a very remote village of indigenous people in Chhattisgarh. It's a province in India, and Dantewada is the district. In a small village in forest, we went there and we put our suitcase under a tree and we started living there. We stayed there for 18 years, and last year we were thrown out of the state by the government, and now we are trying to tell the people why we are thrown out of the state.
Before we discuss in detail your experience in Chhattisgarh, I want you to talk more about Mahatma Gandhi. Because, as you know, I've been to India many times, and it seems to me that Gandhiji is now a kind of figure. Statues, and you see his paintings everywhere. Even on the rupee note, it's a picture of Gandhi. But is his spirit, is his philosophy alive in India?
As far as I understand what Mahatma Gandhi stands for, he stands for everyone's own conscience. What one feels true must follow that. It's not what Gandhi would like or what others would like or what is the popular belief, but what one thinks is right must stand with it. So that is Gandhian, because Gandhi used to say there no Gandhism is possible. Gandhi used to say, even I myself is not a Gandhian. Because whatever I feel true today, I will say that. And if tomorrow I feel something else about the same thing, I will say something else. So Gandhi said, I am ever-changing man. I am a dynamic man. So I do not look behind what Gandhi would say about this, but I stand by what I feel is correct and righteous. So that is what Gandhian ideology is for me. But in India, now we see that many people who call themselves or who like themselves to be called Gandhian are not standing by the truth. They are rather serving the vested interest, the political people who are politically incorrect and corrupt people, and they pose as if they are very much Gandhians. They wear handmade clothes. They put Gandhi's photo behind them. They take pictures with Gandhi's statues, but they work very much against the Gandhian way of living.
One aspect of Gandhi's philosophy, which is rooted in ancient Indian philosophy, is ahimsa, nonviolence. What do you think he would say about India's enormous military budget and the fact that India has nuclear weapons?
We are also trying to bring people's attention about this, that now when we all say that we are improving our democracy, the civilization is going ahead, then naturally we should become more non-violent, we should become more scientific, more rational. And when we talk of becoming more democratic and more rational, then we cannot go for killing others, imposing our thought on others, taking away others' resources, snatching away others' things. That is barbaric backwardness, and that is against all democratic norms. And keeping big military is a sign of this aggressive, non-democratic attitude. That's why we always would like that India should awake and it should behave in a more democratic manner. Unfortunately, to every in response of every demand of the people, state now uses its army and police and armed power, and that is very much against all democratic norms.
Now let's move to Chhattisgarh. What did you start when you went there? You began an ashram?
Yes, we started living, as I told you, we started living under a tree, and then we would call children, give them sweets, and started playing with them. Then we would take them to the hand pump, wash them, and we would sing with them. My wife would try to teach them some language and number, some mathematics. And then youth, we started playing, we took a volleyball, we started playing volleyball with them. And then they asked us, should we make a cottage for you? We said, yes, please. And then they made a cottage for us. And gradually, when we saw that people are very ill there and they are dying of very simple, common diseases like malaria, diarrhea, dysentery, we tried to contact government medical doctors, and they said, no, we won't go to the village. We are getting enough money in cities. And if you wish, you can take medicine from here. We can tell you how to distribute these medicines. And we started distributing medicines to the ailing tribals. And like that, we started that center.
And was that the Vanvasi Chetna Ashram? Yes. Is that what you call it?
Yes, that is the organization we established, and we got it registered, and it became an NGO, non-government organization.
And it was a kind of community health and educational center.
Yes, we started with distributing medicines. Then we had a community health program in which we were having around 720 barefoot health, women health activists who would train their community about what is the root cause of the disease, how to prevent it, how to treat it. And we would give them training, and in that way we could decrease the child mortality rate. The small children used to die very much. It was very high, the mortality rate of children. And women during pregnancy used to die very much. And we worked for reducing that mother mortality rate also. So we worked on that later in a very large area. The initially it was very small experiment, but later it grew as a very major project.
When did the Naxalite or Maoist uprising begin in Chhattisgarh?
They came there in 80s, in 83, 84. And there were atrocities on tribal people by government officials, like a forest officer would rape a woman for bringing fuel wood from the forest to cook food, and a tribal man would be punished by standing whole day in cold water up to neck. And there were brutalities against tribals, and they had to pay money just for entering forest, and tribals were there for ages, and forest officers came later, but they used to pose as if they are the owner of the forest. And also police used to beat tribals very much, take money from them, and also the traders used to take tribals' forest collection at very cheap rate, and they used to cheat them. And then Naxalites came, and they used to beat these forest officers and police and the traders. So tribals felt that Naxalites are protecting us. Naxalites are giving us some strength. They are giving us some power. So tribals started feeling that they are now empowered. So they started liking Naxalites.
Now, how widespread is the support for the Naxalites or the Maoists?
Maoists were trying to organize tribals for their rights, and they were influenced by Marx's theory of class struggle. And they had a notion that this the present day democracy is not a real democracy, and we have to throw it away, and we have to put a people's regime. And for that they were trying to organize tribals, but they were not there was not a large number of Naxalites in that area. But after government attacked tribals in 2005, tribals joined Naxalites in large number.
Now, what role does resources play in Chhattisgarh and the struggle there?
In most of the mineral-rich areas, tribals are residing. And government are trying to sell out these minerals to multinational companies and to rich people's companies. But there are rules which government has to follow. But government officials and political leaders take money from big companies, and they generally bypass the laws. And in 2005, government decided that it would sell minerals to big companies. And to clear the land for big companies, it constituted an illegal militia called Salva Judum. And
this is the Chhattisgarh government that
yes,
did this.
The Chhattisgarh government, which is a Bharatiya Janata Party's government. The BJP is a right-wing Hindu political party. And they constituted this illegal militia, and they picked up some 5,000 lumpen elements, and they gave them rifles, 303 Swiss made rifles, government rifles, and they called them that you are now a special police officer and you can go and kill tribals, you can now go and burn their houses, and you will not be you will have full impunity and protection from the state.
And these are Salwa Judum, they are recruited from the Adivasi community, from the tribal communities?
Yes, that was a very dangerous plan. The plan was that tribals would fight with tribals and rich will be benefited. So these 5,000 illegal vigilantes used to attack villages, and in this way, this state-supported militia burned down 644 tribal villages in Dantewada district and killed many tribals, including small children and old people, raped a large number of women there, and they displaced some 350,000 people.
That's 350,000 people. So what happened to those people? Where did they go?
Some 50,000 people moved to adjoining states like Andhra Pradesh mostly, and some went to Maharashtra, a different state, and some 3 lakh people hide in deep forest.
And that's 300,000 people hid in the forest.
And then government started Operation Green Hunt. And yes, and these vigilantes were supported by government forces like CRPF. CRPF is Central Reserve Police Force, and BSF, Border Security Force, and the state police. So it was a government program to push tribals away from their resources and to clear the land to give it to the rich people's companies.
Now this is being carried out by the Chhattisgarh government. What is New Delhi saying about this, about the killings of people and the displacement, destruction of villages and displacement of hundreds of thousands of citizens?
We took many victims to Delhi. Tribals themselves went to Delhi with us, and they tried to tell it to the media, but the mainstream media is financed by these big companies, the rich people's companies, so they didn't publish their stories, and government didn't listen to them. And we filed cases in Supreme Court, the apex court of India, but still their case is pending. They are not given any justice. And because we think that central government and state government politicians get money from the same companies. That's why they do not take legal action against the people who are doing atrocities on tribals. These governments are very much party to attacks on tribals.
And because the Adivasis, the tribals, have been marginalized politically and economically and isolated from the mainstream of Indian political culture, they don't warrant the attention that other groups might get if they were attacked.
Yes, if we see the formation of the society and the political system, that then we see that political system is very much it's overpowered, or it is in control of elite, privileged, urban middle class, and this powerful class influence government decisions. So government decisions are always taken in interest of this powerful class, and in most of the cases, the 80% of the poor, rural, tribal people, are their interests are not seen, and decisions are taken against their interests. So this political democratic, in a democratic country, all the political power is centered in a privileged class hands.
Now, what kind of pressure were you and your wife coming under, and the ashram's work?
Well, when this illegal militia started burning down tribals' villages, raping women, killing children, then since we were working with the people there, we were living with the people in village, and we had two daughters, so we developed a personal relationship with the tribal community people. So when they were attacked, so it became quite impossible for us not to raise these issues. So we started raising our voice against it. And when we started speaking against these attacks on tribals, then government became very angry with us. And then government demolished our ashram.
When did that happen?
It happened on 17th May 2009. Some 1,000 policemen came in the morning, and they with bulldozers and big trucks and big tanks, and they destroyed our free hospital, library, farmers training center, and staff quarters, and they destroyed everything. Our workers were beaten up. Some journalists who tried to photograph it, they were also beaten up. Some volunteers who have come from different other states, they were also beaten up. So it was an attack on our ashram, because we tried to raise our voice in favor of the people.
You're listening to Himanshu Kumar on Gandhian activism. This is AR. You can order copies of this program by calling our toll-free number, 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. And you and your wife had to leave Chhattisgarh. Under what conditions?
After demolition of our center, we tried to continue our work in Chhattisgarh in a rented house. Then police attacked our landlord and he asked us to leave his house. We again started living under a tree, and then police came and picked up our volunteers and put them in jail, and they started beating tribals for whom we were trying to bring justice. So we thought that we are not in a position to save these tribals, because all the democratic institutions are working for the rich people's companies, and they are all together trying to attack these tribals. They are together involved in attacking these tribals, and these tribals are becoming more and more vulnerable. And it would not be a good idea that we just for our own sake continue our activism, and they are further victimized. So we decided to step back, and we came out on 4th January 2010. I left the Chhattisgarh.
And since then, you've been living in New Delhi.
Yes. Now I have two daughters. One is 14 years old, Alisha, and the younger one is Haripriya, 9 years old. And they and my wife are living in Delhi. And I am in a way floating in around in different places. I am going to tell what is happening in Dantewada. Last year I did a cycle march from New Delhi to Mumbai. It took 80 days, and we organized many meetings during our journey and tried to draw attention of the middle class about what is happening in the villages, what is the fight.
This cycle yatra went from Delhi to Mumbai. It took 80 days.
Yes, it took 80 days, and it was very rich experience, because we saw that this attack on people for their resources is not limited to Chhattisgarh only, but it is happening all over the country, even in Rajasthan, in Gujarat, in Maharashtra. Poor people's land is forcibly taken by rich people with the help of state police, and everywhere people are resisting, but they are being attacked by government.
So this is the hidden war in India, but it's not hidden from the Indian people.
Well, Indian urban privileged middle class do not want to know about it, because it is in their interest, it is in their it's in their profit. Yeah, so they don't want to see that these people are being attacked for their good. So it's their very, very smart political decision not to look at this. And I am trying to shake them, to awake them. And I am also trying to warn them that, you see, these people who are under attack are 80% of the country, and you are only 20%, and you have unfolded a war on 80% people. And if 80% people will fight back, they are going to win. So don't think that you can kill all poor people and take their land for your so-called development. So I'm trying to warn them about the result of it. As Mahatma Gandhi has said, that this model of development will lead you to the war, and your civilization will end, because this development needs more and more resources, and in that process you will take others' resources, you will grab others' resources, and then there will be conflict in the society, and that conflict will lead you to the war. Gandhi used to say the only way is either coexistence or no existence.
Another state where there is a tremendous upheaval and revolt is Orissa in the eastern part of India. And you're planning a cycle yatra, a cycle trip from New Delhi to Orissa. Why are you going to Orissa?
In Orissa, a South Korean company called POSCO, Orissa government has signed a contract with that company to give a very big land to that company. And people who are doing agriculture on that land are not ready to give their land for that company. So,
and this POSCO, this South Korean company, it's a steel company. That's what they're building there, a steel factory?
Yes, they are building a steel factory. And also they are trying to capture the seashore for transporting it through marine transport. And people are very much against this land acquisition. And small children and women are lying on hot sand to oppose police entry in their village. And there is a big demonstration is going on there. So to show our solidarity with these poor people, and also to bring people's attention about this land grab, I am planning to start this time not a cycle yatra but a foot march, a padayatra, so that I can spend more time on walking and talking to the people. It will be walking and talking. So that is going to be a padyatra this time, and it may take 4 to 5 months from Delhi to Orissa.
And this is a way to raise people's consciousness about what's going on in different parts of the country when you talk to them.
Exactly. Because people think that for nation's development, quote-unquote nation's development, someone has to sacrifice. And it is always the poor people who have to sacrifice, and it is always the rich people who get benefit. So this is not happen every time, that rich people become more rich and poor people become more poor in the name of development. Development should focus at the poor people the most, because they are the people who deserve to be developed first.
You mentioned Operation Green Hunt, which was launched by the Home Minister Chidambaram and the Prime Minister Manmohan Singh with great fanfare. Well, it's been going on now for a couple of years. Has it been successful in quelling the various rebellions that are going on all over India?
Not at all. But it has... It helped them to get more and more people enrolled in their cadre, because when people are attacked by someone, they can always go to the government for their protection. But when government attacks, then they have no one to help them. And Naxalites came and they offered their support to the people, and people joined Naxalites. So now in most of the tribal areas, Naxals, or now they call themselves Maoists, they have become very strong. So this Operation Green Hunt has especially helped the Maoists, and it has not helped government in getting rid of the Maoists.
You've said that the Maoists are not themselves the threat. They are the symptom of the disease in our society. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I always think that why rich men are not raising arms, why it is that always poor people are raising, picking up arms. It is because we very silently with our might, with the might of the state, we take their resources and we keep on saying that we are very democrat, we are very spiritual, we are very religious, non-violent people. But it's a very subtle and hidden violence that we do with the on poor people. And when poor people resist our violence, we call them violent.
To get back to Mahatma Gandhi and the techniques that he employed, for example, the nonviolent civil disobedience, do you think these tactics are enough to resist military force?
People always try to get heard non-violently. They want to solve their problems non-violently first. Even in Dantewada, people did not pick up arms in the beginning. They tried to talk to their political leadership, but political leadership was with the rich people because they were getting money. Then they tried to approach government officers. Government officers were also receiving money from the big corporates. And police, government officers, even judges were getting money from big corporations. So no one helped these poor people. And government, when it started burning their houses, raping their daughters, and killing their children, and they were pushed to wall, then there was no non-violent option was left with the people. So it's not that people liked the violence very much, but they liked, they always opted for non-violent means. And even people still are approaching us that if they can get if they can get justice through courts, that would be their first priority. But I'm sorry to say that so far we could not get justice. We are not successful in getting justice even for one tribal. So I am very much depressed that why our democracy is not delivering, why it is not functioning there in the tribal areas.
You wrote a report about called More Grim News from Dantewada Villages, Dantewada being this region in Chhattisgarh state. This just happened in March, I believe, yes, of 2011, more atrocities carried out by the state. What happened in this particular incident that you wrote about?
Yeah, in March 2011, again, this illegal militia called Salvajadum, federal forces and state forces attacked three villages of Dantewada district in Chhattisgarh province of India, and they burned down 300 houses of tribal people, raped five women, killed three tribals, and burned down their granaries. So people contacted us, and we tried to get these reports out, but government did not allow anyone to visit these villages because government wanted to hide all these atrocities committed by itself.
This is the Chhattisgarh government.
Yeah, Chhattisgarh government. And also central government. Central government, a minister went there and central government and state government started saying that no, it was not our police, it was Maoist who burned down these villages. But when some journalist sneaked in from forest and met tribals of these villages, they clearly said that no, it was police who came and burned down our houses, raped women and killed our people. And then the news is out. So the state government is still attacking tribal villages to scare them so that people leave the area and the land is clear to be handed over to big corporations for mining.
The various uprisings throughout the Arab Middle East resulted in several cases of tyrannical governments being overthrown. We don't quite know yet what's going to replace them. But were you inspired or energized by what you saw happening in the Middle East?
Yes, very much. And not only me, but all the people who are working in the communities, who are activists, who are community workers, they are very much inspired by what is happening in Middle East. And we believe that the same things cannot be repeated in other countries. But with the advancement of our civilization, certain values, certain very basic necessity of people like equality and justice and good governance are the basic demand of the people. And if people are not going to get it, they are going to revolt against this injustice and all. And very soon there may be a very big movement against this corrupt regime, yes.
You say that India's false democracy is not going to last. What's going to happen?
It's a question of people's mobilization and it's a question of how early they get united and throw away this corrupt system. So we are prisoners of hope. We cannot give up hope, and we are still trying that there should be a real democracy.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. You're welcome.
That was Himanshu Kumar on Gandhian activism. I talked with him in Boulder, Colorado. Himanshu Kumar is a staunch proponent and practitioner of Mahatma Gandhi's philosophy and techniques of nonviolence and civil disobedience. For many years, he worked in the Indian state of Chhattisgarh. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an unembedded award-winning weekly series based in Boulder, Colorado, celebrating 25 years on the air. Since we began broadcasting in 1986, we've always offered AR free to all public and community radio stations in the United States and the rest of the world. AR is independent. Our sole source of financial support comes directly from listeners just like you. That's why we can do programs such as the one you just heard and others featuring such voices as Arun Gandhi, Bill Moyers, Nandini Sundar, Helen Caldicott, Noam Chomsky, Vandana Shiva, Chris Hedges, Arundhati Roy, and Tariq Ali. To access our complete audio catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for a CD, MP3, or written transcript of Himanshu Kumar on Gandhian activism, call us toll-free at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that toll-free number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our secure website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Siddharth Mitra, Balaji Narasimha, and the Association for India's Development. Series theme music is performed by the Kronos Quartet from Pieces of Africa. Stephanie Brown is our editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Asad Ali Khan, master of the Rudra Veena and one of India's greatest musicians, performing raga Darbari Kanra. Asad Ali Khan passed away on June 14, 2011. I had the privilege and great good fortune to know and learn from him. I will miss him, as will music lovers in India and around the world. Alvida Khan Saab.
Yeah.